This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Transgender Point of View is an Australian news and current affair panel talk show.
Airing weekly and hosted by Joy 94.9.
Transgender people come from every region around the world, racial and ethnic backgrounds and faith communities.
Chances are that you've met a transgender person, even if you don't know it.
But there are still many misconceptions about trans people.
And as a transgender person, there are a lot
of questions asked of us every day.
What's this about using they as a pronoun?
Isn't letting a trans person use my bathroom dangerous?
Do I refer to you as he, she, it, or they?
So what's your real name?
Are you a drag queen?
What's the difference between sex and gender, and why does it matter so much?
Did you have the operation?
What is stealth?
How does someone know they are transgender?
Really random questions.
Are you sure you're not just super gay?
You must be a transvestite.
What bathroom do you use?
Will I be able to have sex?
What does cis mean?
This is Transgender Point of View on Joy 94.9. Now, here's Michelle.
Hi, Michelle here again from Trans Point of View. Today on my show, I've invited Emily Rowe back to have some fun with us as well and bring a friend along. Now, Emily, would you like to introduce your friend for me on the phone?
So my friend we're going to be talking today is Sage Luca, who's an amazing, incredible, fun, vivacious transgender woman who's 20 years old, who's recently made the change not just from the gender of male to female, but from the suburbs of Western Sydney to Melbourne.
Now I'm going to say you sound a little bit biased there on Sage, and Sage is laughing in the background. Now bear with me, I've got a bit of a cold today, so that's why I've brought Em along to help me out. Now Sage, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming along. Now, Sage, you had... looking at some of the photos that I've seen on the interwebs, you seem to have fallen into that sort of category where you've got trans going from sort of that stereotypical masculine to quite a stereotypical expected female persona. But... the reason it caught my interest on this was because of the way the media have sort of portrayed and gone to town on this. Do you care to share a bit with me on that one?
Yeah, I was approached by a lot of different media sort of sources in Sydney when I was quite young. I think because I was the only one that was so extremely public in the area, it was sort of like, you know, I was just an easy target, I think. And I don't know, I think because someone was trying to actually take interest in my transition, which is something that I lacked in my local area, I kind of snatched up that sort of deal, and yeah, it sort of played out the way it did.
Okay. Now, how old are you now, Sage?
I am still 20.
Still 20. So you actually, you know, you're a cute little boy there in some of the photos. now, I'm going through, so basically born male, or assigned male at birth, and started transitioning about what time, what age did you start transitioning?
I started transitioning when I was 19, but probably started seeking help properly at about 18.
Now, obviously there's a difference in sort of telling the story to someone your age. You know, you're 20, I'm turning 40. And so there's a bit of a different sort of path that we all would have followed. And so at your age, did you find you had more support from family and friends with your transition?
No.
Okay.
No. I can't say I have.
So how did you go about getting some help and assistance yourself when coming to dealing with transition at a younger age?
I think it all started, like, I actually didn't know if I was the only one experiencing this. Like I said, I didn't know it existed. So I did some Google searching and found that it's an actual thing. And I went to my local GP, actually, and I asked her for advice, and she had no idea what I was talking about. She was like, I don't know what that is. Let me see if I can get you to a psychologist or a psychiatrist and see what they can do. And I've seen a few of those, and a lot of those didn't actually know what transgender meant either. But eventually, I found one that actually did some research and found quite a popular clinic in Sydney for me to go to. And I think it was sort of like, you know, I think that's where it all began. It's when I found like an actual LGBT clinic that, you know, catered for trans people.
And this is based, and this was all going on while you were in Sydney?
Yes.
Okay. Because a lot of the articles and stuff I'd read mentioned Melbourne. So, is there much support up there in Sydney as there is down here in Melbourne?
I would say it's more known in Melbourne, and I would say that the help is just about as equal. I think it just depends on sort of who you ask. I mean, this isn't something that a lot of people, even trans people, don't really like to talk about what clinics they go to. I remember when I first moved here to Melbourne, I was actually off hormones for a straight 3 months because I couldn't find a clinic. I couldn't find a single clinic that would help me. And yeah, it is hard.
That's one thing I did find when I came out as well, that in order for me to actually find a place to go to, I ended up getting somebody giving me a card out of the blue after a coffee meeting, because I couldn't find a place to actually go that I knew was actually supportive as well. Because you go to some GPs and they're like, oh, I have no idea what you're talking about. So now things are okay with you and your mom now?
Yeah. She's quite a big supporter, and she is a bit of my backbone from where I'm from. So yeah, she's definitely progressed a lot.
So obviously you started your transition in Sydney, but then chose to move to Melbourne. Was there any particular reason for that?
I needed a fresh start. It's really hard to try and portray yourself as, you know, your authentic self when everybody around you for, you know, 6-7 suburbs across always knew you as, you know, the gay guy, which is a really, really hard image to shake, especially in Western Sydney. It was really difficult because from the beginning, I've always been so extremely open and flamboyant, and I was the only one walking down the street with 6-inch heels around, you know, big burly guys throwing beer bottles at me. So I definitely stuck out, and I needed to kind of escape from that, and I just needed to go to a place where nobody knew that I was trans and see how I went. And I was extremely surprised to think that people actually didn't know that I was trans. I just thought I was, you know, a cisgendered woman, which really surprised me, because every day in Western Sydney, I was definitely reminded that I was not.
It was really important for you to get away from somewhere that they knew you before, to start afresh and new.
Yes, yeah.
Now, I've noticed, because obviously the media and stuff has gone crazy talking about your surgeries or non-surgeries or whatever. And obviously myself, I always try to push and not talk about surgeries or whatever, but it's obviously part of your narrative of why we're having this conversation. But one thing I've noticed that you said on here is that you weren't interested in changing your voice or doing a vocalization surgery. Do you mind elaborating on that a bit further for me?
Yeah, I think my voice, it's, when I think about my gender and what, you know, as far as dysphoria goes and what actually makes me feel uncomfortable was the image of myself when I stepped out of the shower. My voice has never really bothered me. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't like listening to it back when I play it, but I think that's everyone. But it's never actually conflicted with my gender. So during my transition, I've never really seen it as something that I should change, because I wouldn't be changing it for me. I would be changing it to fit in with, I guess, what's expected of most trans people, especially young trans people. They're quite pressured into thinking that, well, if this is what you want to choose for the rest of your life, you better be, you know, 100% passable. And I just don't stand for that. I'll change what I need to change to feel comfortable, and everything else can stay the same as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and Sam, myself as well. Like, I've always been a big advocate on, you know, whatever surgery you do it for yourself, not so much for what society says. So, like, for me, I have no interest in doing vocalization surgeries. Or, I mean, I had to re-fall back in love with my voice, because, like you said, you hear your voice back and you go, ooh, I really just don't care much about my voice. And, you know, I still have a masculine voice, but I really don't care. And then, you know, things like lower surgery wasn't important for me. But then I feel that society puts so much pressure on us, as especially as trans women, that they say we have to go and have these surgeries, we have to have this done, we have to be more stereotypical, that I've actually ran across so many trans women now back in the States who I talk to, and they're like, oh, well, I'm detransitioning because I can't get coverage or pay for my lower surgery, so there's no point in continuing. And now I'm going back because I'll never achieve what it is that I'll never be a full woman. And I'm just going to stop and go, is that really as necessary in transition? Do you see yourself as just focused on the few things as part of your dysphoria, or do you feel there's more that you want to change?
I think for me, I'm just going to focus on purely what is dysphoric. I see it as pure relief of my dysphoria, nothing specifically to just change me. I kind of want to stay, you know, as much as before as possible, just without the dysphoria. Like, I've never really wanted to change who I am. I've just wanted to improve my life so I have a better quality of life. So my voice before never affected the way I felt about myself, but, you know, my chest, for example, did. I didn't like when I would wear, because even as a boy, I would still wear female jeans and female tops and stuff, and I just didn't like that I couldn't feel out the top, or my hips weren't round enough for these jeans. And hormones do quite a lot, but there are some things that just isn't, I guess, expected on hormones. Like, hormones can only do so much. So I do see myself having not as many procedures as I set out to do in the beginning, because, you know, I'm a year and a half on hormones now, and my perspective of what needs to be changed and what doesn't is very different to week one on hormones.
Yeah, wait to get 4 years in, it's totally different. With now, when people go and make comments about say your appearance or how you look, you know, look at comments going, oh, you know, a gorgeous girl or this and that. Does it make you feel good hearing all the comments people making about your appearance, or do you see yourself as more than just your appearance?
Sometimes I do feel a little bit underestimated when people purely look on image, because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just a photo on the internet. You know, anyone can look pretty on the internet, but I think people are quite surprised when they meet me in real life, and I'm quite, I guess, in my own way, intellectual, but quite comedic as well. And people don't expect that. They just think that I'm a pretty trans girl that doesn't really have much else going on for her. And I think that there's so much more to trans people than just their transition. Like, we're still human beings at the end of the day. And I think that as trans people, we're a bit more complex than just our transitions. And as far as, you know, photos go, I really don't value my photos that much online. I mean, I enjoy posting online and keeping everyone up to date, but, you know, Em can definitely vouch for me in this. I'm very disconnected when I'm at home. I am very bad with uploading and stuff. I don't know. I don't feel like the internet is an accurate representation of oneself, that's all. And I've sort of gathered that throughout my transition, because I do notice that people, like, underestimate people due to their photos.
So in regards to the online space, I know that that's somewhere you're still quite active, though. I know you've got a Facebook group with over 2,000 followers who watch your live videos. And I know that you're very interested in getting involved in doing YouTube makeup tutorials, etc. So how do you balance, you know, maintaining that online persona and trying to keep it as genuine as who you really are in your day-to-day life?
I really don't know. I mean, I have a lot of people come to me and say, you know, I get a bit surprised with how much of a following I get so quick when I do post things. Like, it does surprise me how many people do take interest. And I think it's because I do like to stay raw as possible. You know, I think there's a lot of pressure on trans people to always, you know, wear a lot of makeup and hair extensions and always present ultra, like, feminine or masculine, depending on, you know, male or female. And I think, I guess, the best way I can really put it is I try to sort of break that barrier and show that, you know, there are days that, you know, you just don't want all of that, and you just want to sort of, like, you know, not every girl walks around in 6-inch heels and hair extensions every day. And that's, I guess that's my aim in showing that trans women are no different. We are just everyday women. And I think that's why a lot of people do tune in, because I think my audience is quite different to most trans people. My approach is to go more for the younger cisgendered population for my following. Like, a lot of my following is not LGBT at all. It's actually a lot of young cisgendered people between the ages of 16 and 20. And I think that that's a good sort of age group to hit, because they're going to be the people that we're going to be sharing the rest of the world with for so long. And I think if I can educate them while, you know, they're still kind of open to it, and I can show them that I am just an everyday person and I can connect with them on that more personal level, they will see me as a real person and not as that trans girl that has to look a certain way. And that's sort of my approach.
Oh, that pressure is definitely there. And I see it all the time. If you were to go and speak to, say, some of the younger trans teenagers, whether they're trans male or trans female, and obviously some of them, as we've seen already, are hiding their true selves, and you know, some are beginning to abuse drugs and alcohol and struggling to come out to their parents, what kind of advice would you give to any of them if they came to you for any kind of mentoring or anything like that, especially after going through a year of transition?
Well, this is something I can definitely speak from, like, personal experience. I've struggled with, you know, substance abuse in the past and being very much unsupported by my local community and even my own family members that, you know, think that, you know, they're going to love you unconditionally. I really come from a bit of a rough start to my transition. And the only advice I can give to those people that are scared is, one, you aren't alone. Stop thinking that you are doing this all on your own. You have to put it all on your own shoulders and you have to be so tough, because there are other people and you'll see them in time and you will recognize that, you know, you're not alone. So that's the first thing I would probably tell young people that are struggling, is you're not alone. And the second thing is, you've really, really got to, I guess, get out of the bubble that you've been living in for however many years, and you've really got to take it by the horns and take charge. Like, I can't stress that enough. The amount of times that I waited and waited so many years that, you know, eventually my life will get better, it'll get easier, it doesn't. I think you just have to, I don't think there is any true right time to transition. And if you keep that mindset in the back of your mind that it'll be easier for me to transition next year because of such and such, it's a lie. It's you subconsciously putting it off. I think the best thing you can do is just go for it, no matter. And, you know, be aware that, like, unfortunately, it's something that comes with transitioning. Yes, you might go through hardships. It's going to be difficult. You know, you're going to have to find clinics. You're going to have to find people that are encouraging, and you do need a support network. I can't stress that enough. Cisgendered, transgendered, it doesn't matter. You need a support network of people that do support you and love you. But ultimately, you're the answer to your own problems. And I think that's my main point that I would share with young people, is the longer you put it off, the more you're going to be like me and regret that I didn't do it when I was 16, because I wouldn't have to fork out so much money nowadays to pay for surgeries to reverse what puberty has done. So young people, well, anyone actually thinking about transitioning, do it. Like, stop thinking about it and dreaming about it. You've really just got to do it for yourself, because at the end of the day, people can sympathize with you, but they're not actually going to care, because they don't know what it's like to have gender dysphoria. Even if they do, they still can't do it for you. So my main advice would be just to do it, no matter what kind of environment you're in.
What about to the parents of these kids who are going through it?
I think it's quite instinctual. I guess there's no real way to tell whether or not, you know, it's if they actually know what they're doing. But I think as any parent, I guess your job is to support them and give them as much happiness as you can. And I don't think that completely, you know, undermining their decision to transition is actually doing that. I think it's doing the polar opposite. And I come from a family that, you know, seeing me go through so many phases, you know, because I, like I said, I didn't know what trans was. So I went through so many phases of coming out and identifying and, you know, showing myself in so many ways. And I actually remember the exact words that people said to me when I actually came out, was, they were like, wait, you're trans now, but last year you came out as gay, and the year before you were bisexual. Like, does this mean what, next year you're going to be an alien? Like, and that really, it really stabbed me a little bit. And I was like, you know what, you're right. I can see how this seems like, you know, I'm just going through phase after phase. But I mean, ultimately, I didn't really have any other way. I couldn't really sugarcoat who I was as a person. So I just, like, if I was born a boy, I guess I'm a dude, because there's no way I can change that. That was my mindset, because I didn't know that trans existed. And I just knew that I was attracted to men, and I guess that means I'm gay. I was never, I guess, lying. It is a path of self-discovery, and I think it really is up to the parents to trust in the individual that they're doing what's right for them. And if they do fall and it's not for them, and just, I guess, be there to catch them. Like, I think it's a no-brainer. I think as a parent, just be there for your child no matter what they're going through. And I feel like I shouldn't really have to say that, but if I do, I've said it there.
So as someone your age who's still sort of discovering where their path and where they're going, where do you see yourself going from here?
Honestly, I don't know.
I'm my age and I don't even know where I want to be when I grow up, so that's okay.
I know. I've always had like goals and expectations of where I'm going to be in 5 years, and now that I'm a year and a half into my transition, I guess I still have that mentality that, you know, I've still got a few things to tick off in my box, but I feel like after that, I'm not sure, because I'm comfortable with the person I am for the first time in my entire life, you know? So it's a bit hard. I don't really know. I guess I kind of envision just an average everyday life as a woman, but just even saying that sounds so strange, because I've had that mentality my whole life of trying to cover that. You know, I was going to try and get married as soon as I could, and, you know, get my wife pregnant, and, you know, do the whole shebang. And now all of a sudden I have this, you know, all these different, you know, different paths I can take, because I'm 100% authentic and open about my life. And honestly, it's kind of strange. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't have anything to cover up, and this is me. I don't really know how to approach it now.
Yeah, so you get the world's more opened up for you for the decisions and directions you want to go.
Yeah.
Well, Sage, I really do thank you for coming on and sharing a bit of your story and who you are and giving some wisdom from the struggles you've been through. Emily, thank you so much for coming on and joining me as well and talking to Sage. And thank you to everyone else listening in, and we'll talk to you soon. And thank you for listening today. If you do want to reach out to us, you can get us on email transpov@joy.org.au. You can also get us on Facebook, which is transpov on joy. You can get us on Twitter, transpov, or you can just come to joy.org.au and just follow up what's going on here at Joy in general. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.